Okay, let's talk planets now and the secret lives of planets. Our guest is Paul Murdin, and Paul is an emeritus fellow in the Institute of Astronomy at Cambridge University. Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning, Bill. Nice to be here.
I'm delighted to have you on, Paul. I, as a youngster, I think like a lot of people, certainly of my era, I mean, I grew up in the kind of, you know, the 70s, and I looked up in the sky and thought, blimey, that's incredible. And having watched, you know, Neil Armstrong land on the moon, you kind of, it's a kind of wonder. Did it start for you as a childhood thing?
Yes, it did. I was always interested in, as far back as I can remember, was interested in science. And one of the projects that I did at school in the sort of after-school science club was to make a little telescope out of cardboard tubes and lenses. And I used that to look at the planet Venus and nebulae and star clusters and Saturn and so on, and Jupiter and its satellites going around it. I can remember propping the telescope up on the coal shed at the bottom of the garden, sort of peering up into the sky.
Fantastic. And of course, in those days, there was maybe slightly less light pollution than there is now.
Yes, so although I was born and brought up in London, and
right,
the smoky atmosphere didn't help.
No, absolutely. I think for one of my birthdays or Christmases, I think I've got this right, was there a big kind of Bible called the Norton's Star Atlas?
There was indeed, yeah. It was sort of it was a large blue-covered
book
with the star charts inside. You got given one.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked for it. I said, that's what I want for Christmas. I want the Norton Star Atlas so I can have a look around the skies and work out what's going on.
I like the front pages of that. It was absolutely packed with facts.
Yeah.
Little tables of facts and lists of things. I really enjoyed that.
Just brilliant. And I was very lucky. At the time, I was living in Lancashire, and I went on a trip to Jodrell Bank, and they had the planetarium at Jodrell Bank. And I was fascinated by the planetarium, so much so that I went home and I got myself an old tin can, and I made my own planetarium with a 12-volt car battery and a light bulb and stuck it inside and put holes with a compass through the tin can in the shape of the constellation.
Oh, lovely. Jodrell Bank has still got a little bit of that sort of amateurish sort of atmosphere. It was, it was set up after the Second World War with war surplus equipment, radio antennas and so on from radar. And you still see that stuff lying about. It's still got a sort of a sort of can-do amateur science sort
of. Yeah, the kind of mad professor thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the book, The Secret Lives of Planets, I guess there's a lot we don't know, but there's quite a lot that we do know about the planets.
I think since the space age, and since space scientists have been able to send satellites on missions to now all the planets, we've been able to see them in considerable detail. And, I mean, some of them still pop up surprises, and some of them have created questions that are not yet answered.
Mm.
But we do know a remarkable lot about what they look like and what it would be like to go to some of them.
I was desperately sorry for poor old Pluto that they got demoted to the state of minor planet. I mean, who makes the decision to demote a planet after billions of years?
Well, the International Astronomical Union reckons that it's the authority on these things, they have their main job is to sort of gather everybody's results together and put them into big lists that can all be then coordinated and sort of synthesized into some science, and in order to help with their classification, in order to help with their work of doing that, they classify everything. So they have lists of planets, and they have lists of minor planets, and they have lists of this and that and the other. And Pluto was in the list of planets until it was obvious that it didn't really fit there.
Oh.
So it had to be put somewhere else.
What did it do wrong? What did it do wrong to get this demotion then, Pluto?
Its main thing is it's in the wrong orbit. One of the properties of a planet which they decided was important was that it was so big that it had gobbled up all of the debris and stuff that was floating in the solar system nearby, that it had cleared its feeding zone, is what they say.
Right.
And Pluto is not like that. Pluto does orbit among some other pieces of stuff. And in fact, it even orbits across the orbit of Neptune.
Oh.
So it hasn't cleared up anything. It's left itself in a bit of a mess.
Oh,
so
bless it.
It didn't really have the power that that the other eight planets had. So that's why it got kicked out.
Some great stuff in the book, some things that maybe people don't know and haven't heard about before. The Earth, for example, is the only planet to occupy what's called the Goldilocks zone. Tell us what the Goldilocks zone's all about.
Well, if you've got a planetary system of many planets, some of them are so close to their star that they get very hot.
Right.
And so if you had any water on such a planet, it would turn into steam and evaporate and
yep.
go up and leap out into space. And then other of the planets would be so far away that any water on them would be ice. And there's a sort of a Goldilocks zone in the middle where it's not too hot and not too cold.
And like the porridge, water. Then, basically. That's where it's coming
like
from, right?
like Goldilocks porridge on the table. And there you can have water in oceans and therefore the possibility of life to evolve. So that is thought to be the reason why there's life on the Earth, but apparently not on any of the other planets, so far as we know.
Wonderful. Now, the big planets, the kind of the gas giants, if you like, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune, some amazing stuff there. I mean, something like Saturn, what it must be like to stand on the surface of Saturn and look up.
It would be superb. Saturn doesn't actually have a surface. It has clouds, and maybe you could go there and sail in a sailplane around and around. But,
right.
but when you looked up, you'd see this great arch
Amazing.
Of rings up in the sky above you. And it would never be completely dark on Saturn because the sunlight would reflect off the rings. It would be like having many full moons in the sky all at the same time.
Amazing.
There would always be some there casting moonlight on the tops of the clouds. There are fears that one day the Earth will have rings like Saturn because there's so much space material being launched that little bits of it sort of bits of it crash together and make little pieces, and these little pieces spread out in orbit around the Earth, and we are developing a ring system.
Good grief. That brings me to a very good point. I saw an article in one of the national newspapers, and to say it was an odd headline would be an understatement. The Martians are here, and we're having them for lunch.
Yes.
And that's alluding to an asteroid which crashed into Mars 200 million years ago, I think, isn't it?
Yes, I mean the one of the things that's been found out in recent years is that there's quite a transfer of material between the planets. Asteroids crash into the surface of the rocky planets, and they splatter bits and pieces up into up above the surface, and some of them go into space. They drift around in the solar system for a long time, and then they fall perhaps onto another planet. So we have bits of Mars that have suffered this fate and fallen down onto the Earth, and people in collecting meteorites, people have found, I think, about 150 pieces
wow.
that are attributable to Mars, including
Amazing.
One that was supposed to have fallen in Egypt and incinerated a dog when it
crikey.
It hit it.
The newspaper goes slightly further, doesn't it, and basically infers that there is dust all over the Earth, and that it's in the ground, and we're probably eating carrots with bits of Mars on them.
Little sprinkles of Mars. I mean, some of the pieces are big enough so that they can actually hit the Earth and we can pick them up, but much more of it is just dust, and it comes into the atmosphere and drifts around and then falls on your garden.
Well, it kind of puts a whole new meaning to that old jingle, and Mars a day helps you work, rest and play, doesn't it?
Yes.
And things falling actually are another subject because, you know, we're quite lucky here. But, for example, on the moon, according to the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has been photographing away since 2009, they get new craters there of more than 10 metres at the rate of 180 a year, which wouldn't be that great if you want to colonise a place, would it?
No, if you want to build buildings there in order to do whatever work it is you've decided to do on the moon, then you've got to somehow think of making them proof against meteors that will strike the surface, because the moon has no atmosphere. We get struck by meteors all the time. But they nearly always burn up in the atmosphere, so they don't do any harm. But if you're on the moon, you get the full impact of the meteor hitting you, and that wouldn't do you any good at all. So there are some lava tunnels on the moon where there's been volcanic activity and created lava tunnels. And one thought is that astronauts might have to build their buildings inside these lava tubes, live underground, as it were.
Obviously, you're talking in your book about the planets in our solar system, but that's when the mind starts to boggle, doesn't it? When you look outside of our own solar system, and you know that phrase that you learn when you're at school, that there are more stars in the sky than all the grains of sand and all the beaches in the world put together, blah, blah, blah. And one assumes that they've, you know, all got their own planets, and we know some of them do, orbiting them. The mind boggles, doesn't it, at that point?
Yes, I mean it's very common for stars to have planets. It's reckoned that there are possibly twice as many planets in the galaxy as there are stars on average. A star will have one or two or three planets. Not so far. We haven't found many of them that have got as many planets as we have.
Interesting.
So we're rather special in that sense.
Mm.
But planets are dead common, and presumably the planets that are in the Goldilocks zone of their planetary system have had the chance to develop life on them. So that's an intriguing thought, I think.
Amazing. This is probably
I think that life is ubiquitous in the universe. The life is everywhere.
Yeah.
What I think is rare is life that is as intelligent as you and me and able to talk on the telephone.
Well, you say life is intelligent as you and me, but if an alien was to come down to Earth right at the moment and look at what's going on with Brexit, I think I'd probably head straight back again and say, I'm not going there. That's
Yeah, that's right. Is there intelligent life on Earth?
Absolutely. This is probably a question you can't answer, Paul, but if I said to you, okay, Paul, I've managed to secure the funds to get you a spacecraft, Paul, you can choose to visit any planet in the solar system outside of the Earth. Which one would you go to?
I wouldn't go to a planet. I'd go to one of the moons of Saturn, called Titan.
Why?
It's the only satellite in the solar system that has an atmosphere in the way that we do.
Yeah.
But it's an atmosphere of methane rather than of a nitrogen and oxygen like ours.
Wow.
It's nitrogen and methane. And the reason our Earth had an atmosphere of nitrogen and methane when it was first formed. And then life developed, and life breathed in all of the methane and breathed out the oxygen. So it's a satellite which is in many ways like the Earth used to be. So if you go there and do experiments and investigate and find out about things, then you can build up a picture of the way that the starting point for life here on Earth. It would take some of the guesswork out of trying to decide how everything started. You could see on this satellite, you could see how it used to be on Earth a long time ago, in the first, I don't know, 500 million years or so of its existence. The conditions from which life began, and I'd really like to know that.
How interesting. So that would be the place to buy up real estate then?
Well, have a great future, yes. your capital gain would be terrific. but you'd have to wait a few billion years.
Yeah, you may not be around to pick up the profit.
I don't think so.
Yeah, brilliant. I love the book, Paul. Thank you for coming on and talking about it. It's called The Secret Lives of Planets. Paul Murden, really appreciate your time today.
Great. Bye.
Bye-bye.